And a very good morning to you. It's John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group back with you for another program of The Law and You, which of course means it's Tuesday morning, your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 9:30. All we need you to do is get on the telephone, and that number is 55208888. That's 55208888. For our friends south of the border, of course, or south of the Tweed River more properly, you need to put 07 in front of that number. Otherwise, you'll get straight through from Tweed and north. We also have our email address if you wish to email a question in, which we would be able to answer next week, and that is talkback, all in lowercase, one word, at 4crb.com. So if you're not able to get to the telephone and make a call, you can certainly email a question in, and we'll do our best to answer that for you next week. Thank you to all the people who called in last week. We certainly had an interesting program. Many and varied questions, which is always useful. We hope for the same today. But it all depends on your calls. So we presently have no callers online at the moment. So if you'd like to be the first caller of the day, our number is 55208888. While we're waiting for some calls to come through, just a few things of which I think may be of interest. I received just last Thursday an email advising that the government has passed legislation enabling digital signatures to be used on documents until 31 March next year. So that's until 31 March 2022. So particularly with the situation in New South Wales and Victoria, obviously this is a very important piece of legislation, because business needs to continue, and if documents can't be signed personally, then the ability to sign documents remotely by digital signature does, of course, become increasingly important. So that's a very practical measure from the government to extend the use of those digital signatures until then. My sister and I were going through quite a lot of papers of my parents just in the last few days, and came across a few interesting things, some of which I've passed on to Col, which are historical documents from the early days of 4CRB to relate to the test transmissions that were carried out. One was the test transmission in December 1984, which was just before, it was December 83 through to January 1, 1984, which was not long before the station's license, of course, was granted and we went permanently to air. And the other was for a test transmission that was carried out earlier in 1983 in July. So that was quite interesting. And also an insert that appeared, I think from memory, in the Gold Coast Bulletin, and it was quite a little document consisting of 31 pages, all about 4CRB and who was in 4CRB at the time, and included on the front page the extracts from the speech made by Sir Joe Bjelke-Petersen when he officially opened 4CRB on the 10th of May 1984. And it's interesting because Cole was just saying to me last week that he had found some old reel-to-reel tapes in Steve Stuttle's office, which contain the speech given by the Premier for the opening of 4CRB. So we're in the process of getting together more and more of this documentation to ensure that the corporate history of 4CRB is not lost as the years go by. But enough of that. We still have no callers online. So if you have a question or a query this morning, give us a call right now on 55208888. One of the other things that caught my eye, and I'm sure it caught everyone's eye just in the last week, were those silly protests down at the Queensland-New South Wales border. Whilst all of us can understand the frustration of particularly people who live in Tweed, Coolangatta and businesses that are operating across that border, Nonetheless, the actions of these protesters do nothing to assist the cause, and I think, if anything, they only make the resolve of the respective governments of New South Wales and Queensland stronger. But again, in looking through these papers that that I found amongst some archives of my parents, was an article which appeared in a Tales of Our Time publication that was put out, I think from memory, as part of the Tweed Daily, or the Tweed Valley Times, actually, back in June 1993. And it was an article about the Spanish flu and how the Spanish flu impacted the border town of the border towns of Tweed and Coolangatta. And I would suspect that many of the people who were at the protests there last weekend may not even be aware that, in fact, in 1920, the border was closed down as a result of the outbreak of the Spanish flu and the concerns about it coming north from Sydney into Queensland. Makes for very interesting reading. They actually had separate camps set up, one in what used to be called Shark Bay, which of course is now Rainbow Bay, and another at Point Danger, one for the women to be quarantined in and the other one for men to be quarantined in. And it was 7 shillings and 6 pence per week for people to stay there while they were in quarantine. So, but it's a really interesting article because, boy, if you think things are tough at the moment in terms of what's going on in the border, a read of what happened back in 1920 will certainly open your eyes as to just how difficult it was back then. But enough of that. We've got our first caller online. As we say, a very good morning to John. G'day, John. How are you today?
Yeah, good, thanks, John, yeah.
How can we help?
Mate, I'm just inquiry in relation to testamentary trusts.
Yes.
Just say I've got a super fund.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a managed fund at this stage, and some shares.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got my wife, and I've got 2 children from a previous marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the situation is, if I wish to elect to have those 2 assets, when I die, placed mm-hmm. in trust
yep.
for my wife to get the income from it,
mm-hmm.
from the assets,
yes.
right? And on her death, those assets pass to my 2 children.
Yes.
Is that what a testamentary trust is designed to do?
It can do that, John, but it may not be necessary for you to go to the expense of putting in place a testamentary trust to achieve what you want. The first thing you need to be aware of is that your self-managed super fund will not be an asset of your estate. And so the only way that you can get your self-managed super fund into your estate will be to put in place a binding death benefit nomination whereby your super fund goes to your legal personal representative, which is a very long-winded term for executor, but it's a specific term that's required for self-managed funds. So if you were to put in place a binding death benefit nomination, you could put your super fund or the proceeds of your super fund into your estate and the shares would automatically become part of your estate because they're personal assets. And so when those assets came under the control of your executor under your will, you could actually just have a life interest in place under your will for the income off those assets to go to your spouse during her lifetime, and then on her death for those assets to go to your children. Now, whether you need a testamentary trust or not is going to depend on the circumstances perhaps of your wife and more probably the circumstances of your children, because basically the purposes of a testamentary trust are to protect the assets from outside claims. So, and by that I mean, for example, if one of your children was an obstetrician and the other one of them was a in an occupation where there is some risk attached, for example, a lawyer, so there's a chance that they could be sued, or alternatively, if one of your children's in a shaky marriage and you're worried that that once your child inherits, that their spouse might simply want to get their hands on the money and leave, then a testamentary trust can be a very useful tool to use, because what it does is that it quarantines the assets to a large extent from claims if it's set up properly. And it's very important how it's set up, who the trustees of the trust are going to be, who the appointor of the trust is going to be, to ensure that it's as bulletproof as possible. The other advantages of a testamentary trust are that they provide the ability to split income with infant beneficiaries. So if you had a normal family trust that you had during your lifetime, if you allocate more than, I think it's about $416 to an infant beneficiary, any money you allocate over that out of income is taxed at the top marginal rate, presently 47 cents in the dollar. But in a testamentary discretionary trust, children are treated the same as adult taxpayers, which means that they get the benefit of the full tax-free threshold. So there can be some significant advantages to children, particularly if they have young families, where they can allocate, for example, enough money to that child to pay their school fees or pay for their school uniforms, all that sort of thing, out of income. And it's effectively paid for in pre-tax dollars rather than after-tax dollars, if the income of the testamentary trust is sufficient to pay out that level of income.
Right. So I don't want any. I don't need any income to the children or their children.
No. At the moment. So that might be something further down the track for you.
Yes. Hmm. Although when my wife dies, the assets in total, I mean, they can go to those two children, their adult children, and then as far as I'm concerned, they can deal with them how they want. So the simple way, what you're saying, as I understand, maybe not necessarily, because I'm not worried
trust.
About... Yeah, not necessarily a testamentary trust, just put it all in place in a will.
Yep, with a life interest to your spouse. What I would recommend you do, John, before going too far down the track of getting a new will in place, do you have a financial advisor or accountant who assists you with your self-managed super fund?
It's not self-managed, it's simply a managed fund.
Oh, it's a managed fund, so it's basically a retail or an industry fund.
Yes.
All right, okay, so do you have an accountant?
Yes, I can get a hold of the account.
Right, yeah. Okay, because what I would be suggesting you do before you make any final plans is get some financial advice about what you're wanting to achieve, and then get legal advice, and you could then go into some detail as to what is required under your will, and in particular, whether you do have any need of testamentary trust. It sounds to me like you don't, but it's always worth having a full conversation about that with your lawyer before you make a final decision. But as they say, forewarned is forearmed, so I would be suggesting get advice as soon as you can.
Okay. Appreciate you. Thanks very much, John.
Okay then, John, all the very best. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 19 and a half minutes past nine. The Law and You is the program. Very quiet morning out there. I think maybe everyone's outside looking at the storm coming in. Haven't seen a storm for quite a while, so it might be a novel thing. But if you're out there and you've got a question or a query, get on that telephone straight away. 55208888 is the number. We'll be back after this word from our sponsor.
Bell Legal Group is the Gold Coast's longest established law firm. Their highly experienced team of professionals can provide assistance in wills and estate planning, property law and conveyancing, family law, business and commercial law, and much, much more. Contact our sponsor, Bell Legal Group, on 55973366. That number again, 55973366. Or learn more about what they can offer you at belllegal.com.au.
And this is the Law Renew on 4CRB. Our telephone number 55208888. That's 55208888. And before John's call, you may recall I was talking about just how bad things were between, or difficult, sorry, things were on the border between Queensland and New South Wales during the Spanish flu outbreak, or the pneumonic flu, which found its way back to Australia after the First World War and became particularly virulent in the border region in the 1920s. Just some idea of how difficult it was. Coolangatta had no school, so the children from Coolangatta used to have to go to school in Tweed. And the result of that was that the Queensland government had to urgently put in place arrangements for the schooling of children, and that was conducted in the council chambers. In addition, the doctor was only allowed to visit patients in Coolangatta under police escort. So can you imagine what that would have been like? So, and the other one that really I thought was a classic, the manager of the ESNA Bank, which was in Tweed, was allowed to sit on a box in no man's land, which was the section between Queensland and New South Wales. And you need to understand that these two sides of the border actually had barbed wire fences and a no man's land. It's almost like Checkpoint Charlie in Berlin, to be honest, when you think about it. And he was allowed to sit on a box in no man's land, and he would receive money from customers on the Queensland side, provide them with whatever change or they needed or receipts for banking, etc. And that was in place until they set up a little pulley system from side to side so that you would put your banking or whatever it was into a little box. And that would be pulled into a cigar box, actually, and that would be pulled across this no-man's-land region from one side to the other. So, so as I say, things were not exactly easy on the border back then. So if you think it's bad now, spare a thought for what it must have been like back then. But enough of that. We have Bill on the line. Good morning, Bill. How are you today?
Yeah, good, thanks, John.
That's good. How can I help you today?
A resident of Namir has two rental properties here in Queensland.
Yes.
That person passes away recently. How is the transfer of those properties handled?
Well, it will need to be dealt with according to their will. The first thing I would be looking for is whether they did a will in Australia to deal specifically with Australian assets only, which is not uncommon for residents of overseas jurisdictions like Noumea. Otherwise, if they didn't do that, the next question is whether the property was owned as joint tenants with their spouse. And if that was the case, then if it's joint tenants, the property will automatically devolve on the surviving joint owner. And what's required?
Yeah, this is a surviving spouse.
This is a surviving spouse. Okay.
Yeah, so only one.
And do you know whether there was an Australian will just to deal only with Australian assets?
That I'd have to check because okay. They did reside in Australia for quite a number of years.
Well, they very well may have an Australian will. Do they still have assets in Noumea, do you know?
Yes.
Okay, so obviously Noumea is under French rule, and so therefore the French laws would apply in relation to what has to happen there. And it's quite an unusual system. They have basically, for want of a better description, mandatory inheritance. So a certain percentage of the estate must go to surviving children, etc., regardless of what a will may say. So what you need to do is first find whether there was an Australian will and whether that was limited to assets in Australia or whether it was a worldwide will. And then from there, if there was no Australian will, you need to look to whether there was a will in Noumea. The final thing may be to look to the rules in Australia, look to the rules of intestacy as to who's entitled to the estate if there was no will. All right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there would be a will. Thanks very much. That's good.
Okay, Bill. All the very best. And the time is just on 25 minutes past nine as we say good morning to Barbara. G'day, Barbara. How are you today?
Oh, good morning. How are you, John?
Very well indeed. Thanks.
John, I have a question that I've got a problem with a torrent of water whenever it rains coming from our back neighbour, mm-hmm. whose lawn slopes down towards our property.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're 2 metres below our neighbour.
Mm-hmm.
It's eroded the soil in the retaining wall garden, and it's also caused rotting of the treated pine retaining wall.
Right.
I've called council. They've checked their downpipes and their guttering, and said there's nothing that can be done.
Mm.
I'm just wondering what sort of recourse I have. I've spoken to the neighbours, and they don't want.
Right, sorry, we lost you a little bit there, Barbara. You said you've spoken to the neighbours and they are not interested in assisting?
They're not interested in doing anything, no.
Right, okay, no. All right. So is the fall from the neighbour's property to your property the natural fall of the land? Is that the way the land would have fallen originally?
Yes, I would say so.
Okay,
yes.
All right, because that's basically the natural flow of water. So if the neighbours haven't redirected the water, there's really not a great deal you can do to stop the natural flow of water from a higher property to a lower property. But there are a couple of practical things that you could do, and the first one would be for you to have constructed some form of drain immediately on top of the retaining wall between the back fence and your property that will pick up that water when it comes down and divert it away from your retaining wall and from washing out the soil. It is a common problem, Barbara. It's very, very frustrating, that's for sure. And the sad thing about it is you only become aware of it when you get a really bad downpour of rain. When the ground on the higher property is simply so saturated that it can't take in any more water, so the water's got to go somewhere, and it follows the natural fall of the land. So that's probably, I know it's not a very satisfactory solution. I mean, the ideal thing would be if you could come to an arrangement with your neighbour where you could put some form of spoon drain immediately on the top side of the fence, but whether that drain went on the top side of the fence or the bottom side of the fence is probably not going to make a lot of difference in terms of how you're going to get rid of it. And then, of course, once you collect it, you've then got to work out how you're going to get it off your property, presumably out to the street.
Yes. Well, we have put in some ag pipes and a pit, but it's not sufficient.
No,
at the end of the day, the water actually, it's so vast, you know, on heavy downpours that it stands around that side of the house, which is not good.
No, that's for sure. So what I would be suggesting you do is get a plumber and drainer in to look at it. Sadly, it could be an expensive fix in terms of putting in a spoon drain or something of that nature, which is sufficient to catch all the water. And then to channel it to an appropriate point where it can be perhaps either joined up to your downpipes from your house going to the street, or a separate drainage pipe put under the ground down the side of your house to take it out to the street.
Right.
All right then.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, John.
Okay.
Thank you.
No trouble at all, Barbara. Well, there we go, a little bit of drainage advice as opposed to legal advice. But anyway, it's good to be practical about solutions if we possibly can be. I'm John Fragley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning for this program of The Law and You. I look forward to being back with you, of course, next week for another program. But as always, until then, it's goodbye and God bless.
You've been listening to The Law and You, proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group, the Gold Coast's longest established law firm. Helping Gold Coasters since 1955. Call them today on 55 97 33 66.